I sat in silent for a moment, in shock that my plan had even worked. It seemed almost too simple, too easy, but here he was. Derek had a kindly face, wrinkles around his eyes and cheeks only added to the softness of his expression. His white hair poking out from beneath his flat cap stood out in a dark night. "That's a lovely little patch you've planted. I can look after it if you'd like. I used to maintain a lost garden here," he said, breaking the silence that had followed since his initial words. "I know who you are. We need you," was all that I could manage. The mental exhaustion and fatigue from this whole experience had built up, but his arrival was like finishing a bad day working at school. It felt like I could relax again, even if only for a little. "What's your name, darling?" he asked. "It's Kat. I live in flat 42 now." His face lit up as I confirmed my flat number.
"Prudence is gone?"
he asked. "She's gone, but the whole place is a mess. So many things are happening, and the residents are suffering," I answered him. We chatted for what felt like hours, outside of nothing but moonlight. He told me how he used to consider the building part of the garden. A place for him to maintain. The residents, just like the plants he looks after. I explained my whole experience since moving in. I told him about Jamie, and I sobbed. Derek held me as I cried and made me feel safe. Something I had forgotten the feeling of since receiving Bruce's note. He didn't interrupt. Instead, he just listened. I told him about Natalia and the cultists. The problems they had been causing. He was particularly heartbroken when he heard that they had used Eddie and Ellie for entry. He had gone before they were born, but remembered Terry as a child and how sweet she was. He was pleased when I told her what a sweet adult she has become. My claims that Prudence was the only person who knew how to kill the imposter neighbors were met with a skeptical expression, which gave me some hope. Derek listened to my entire tale with barely a word, and when I finished, he stood up and asked me to follow him. I was confused, but I didn't as I was told. He walked me to the entrance of the lift. I lifted my arm to check the time on my watch. We've been outside for quite some time now, and the idea of the creatures being inside made my heart pound and my stomach hurt.
"You're safe. It's 12:32 a.m. There's no need to worry or check your watch."
And with that, he pressed the coal lift button. Despite his insistence that I was safe, my stomach continued to do gymnastics. It felt like forever before the lift had finally made the clunking sound, and the one that meant it had reached the bottom. I felt my whole body violently shake as the doors opened. I honestly don't know what I expected to see. We were in the safe time zone. But every time that I looked inside of the lift, I just pictured Jamie's dead, crunched up body. "Step inside," he said. "I can't. Please don't make me," I begged him. "I won't let anything happen to you, but you need to see something." There was such sincerity in his eyes as he spoke. I had never trusted someone so completely, so quickly. But every fiber of my being told me this man was entirely good. so I stepped inside on the lift. Derek stepped in behind me, placing a comforting hand on my shoulder as I hyperventilated. He gently turned to face the panel of the buttons that control when the lift stops.
"What is wrong with this panel? Do you see it?"
he asked cryptically. I studied the panel. I read all of the numbers, counting them, but I couldn't see anything wrong. I tried and I tried really, but nothing seemed out of place at all. Everything you expected to find was there, and nothing more. So I shook my head, barely regaining my composure.
"Can you take us to floor 9, please?" he smiled slightly as he made the request.
I looked back to the panel to press the button, but floor 9 didn't exist. I was so confused. I'd counted the numbers. I was sure of it. Derek must have made it disappear. But the panel didn't look any different to before. I can't explain it. Looking at it, I would have sworn blind nothing was wrong with it. Even once I knew. But floor 9 didn't exist, and Derek could see my frustration. It was like the building was now playing tricks on me. He walked me out of the lift and sat me down at the bottom of the stairs before he could finally begin. "The building is like a living organism. It can see all of parts of the world, and it can open up others you never could have imagined. And when those awful people burned that whole floor of residence, I was devastated. Some wonderful people lived there in those flats. Both of the usual and unusual variety. But those people had no limit to their cruelty. Whole families burned alive. It was a tragedy that made me so angry. I felt so guilty when it happened. I can predict what some of our more tricky residents are going to do and make sure I'm there to help. But those people were nothing to do with this place. I couldn't see what they were planning, so I couldn't stop it." At this point, I noticed one of the hairless cats that sat between us. Derek looked at it with tears brimming in his eyes. He stroked it, and it moved onto his lap. His fingers didn't burn at all, and he continued. "When it happened, the building used its defense mechanisms and sealed off the entirety of the floor. It stopped the fire from spreading and kept the perpetrators there to die by their own hands. The building only allowed the floor to be unsealed once they were done. It took about a week before those awful people turned up again, asking for sugar at people's doors. The first few let them in. It was so difficult. So many residents burned alive that I was having to use their remains for my garden just to hide the den. The entire community were terrified and grieving for those who died. And no matter how hard I tried, I still couldn't predict them or see them, so I took Prudence, who at the time seemed like a perfectly reasonable woman, to the burned out floor. Floor 9, however, had been sealed again. There was no button in the lift, and it always skipped on the stairs. Only no one had noticed. This building really is a magnificent creature." I stared at him in amazement. For a whole story, I was exhausted, but my brain was working in overdrive to process what he was telling me. I had started to stroke the cat too. My fingers didn't burn, but I didn't flinch. I found this company comforting, and he carried on. I went back later that night and took the stairs again, alone this time. I think my intentions were clear, and the staircase allowed me to access floor 9 for the first time since just after the fire. I brought Prudence to the floor within the hour. The stairs had stopped skipping floor 9 for me. Although, I later learned that when Prudence had tried alone, she wasn't allowed in. We explored the floor, walking amongst the remains of our old dead friends' belongings. Eventually, we came across one of the soulless arsonists, roaming the halls. It appears that's where they spend their time when they aren't out terrorizing the residents, trying to claim more victims. He was disturbed and disorientated to see anyone not like them on that floor. He twitched a little and spat out the sugar line as if it was an automatic response. I almost felt sorry for him. He claimed to have come from flat 66, and more were approaching behind him. Prudence was terrified. She was starting to sweat profusely and backed away from the man. But it didn't cool her down. He was burning her, slowly. Yet, I felt nothing. See, the stranger things in life just don't seem to affect me. I've never really known why, but sometimes I even know how to deal with them. It's like it's programmed into me. On this new playing field, in their domain, I knew what to do. I grabbed the man and I ran him down to flat 66, four doors from where we were standing. I threw him into the flat and I waited. The other arsonists were approaching. The man tried to exit the flat that was doorless. All the wooden doors had burned down to cinders in the fire. But as he reached to the door, something had stopped him. He couldn't leave, no matter how hard he tried, or how much he screamed. Prudence lit up. She grabbed a hold of one that tried to kill her friend, Molly. She remembered the flat number she had claimed to be from and repeated my actions. A lot more sweating and some winces of pain. It worked again. Prudence wanted to go after the rest, but as they got closer, I could see the blisters forming on parts of her body. I dragged her out of the hallway and back into the stairwell. We ran. She begged me to take her back. And the stairs wouldn't let her, that it was too dangerous. The residents had started to learn not to let them in, and we had no casualties at all after we trapped the first two. Don't get me wrong, it's a problem I was intending to deal with, but it was around that time that we first met. We learned that the council would be building that monstrosity over the top of my garden. He gestures to the window that showed some on the neighboring tower block. This left me not at my best. My intuition was failing me when a few months after that I allowed Prudence and Molly to herd the creatures from lift 4 to floor 9. It's one of my biggest regrets. I should have never walked them up there. I didn't know she was going to burn them all. She didn't give me a chance to reason. I became mistrusting of everyone and distracted. Not long after I went away for a long while. So I guess the arsonist remained and now they're threatening you. Tomorrow, I will go. I'll fix this mess I left behind. I'm so sorry it's affected you so badly. I'd love to meet these twins. They sound incredibly brave. They are, I finally interrupted. And I want to be there tomorrow. I want to lock up Natalia away for good. I can't allow it. You'll be attacked. He cut me off entirely. I let it drop instantly, but in the back of my mind, I knew I would be there no matter what. I went to sleep that night, my mind reeling. I wonder where Derek slept, and if he even needed to. The next morning, I left my flat early. I passed the man on floor 5, and I sat and waited on the steps at floor 8. I tested it first, of course, and just like I anticipated, ascending any higher took me to floor 10 or 11, depending on if you hit a skip. So I returned to floor 8 and I waited. Derek had indicated what time he was coming, but I was ready. I would wait all day and night if I had to, but luckily, I didn't. Derek was climbing the stairs at around 11 a.m. I had already been there for 3 hours, but it had been worth it. He looked particularly unimpressed to see me. His face still looked kind though, even with the sour expression. "I can't stop you, can I?" he sighed, sounding rather resigned in his tone. Not for anything. You have to promise to stay back. If your girl approaches you, you can do what you need to. But you have to stay back, he pleaded. I nodded and I stood up. We ascended the stairs, and for the very first time in my new life here, I saw the big plastic sign saying 9. The floor that didn't exist. As we pushed through the door, it was like entering an entirely new world. Everything was black, burnt to carbon. You could smell nothing but charcoal. Literally nothing but empty shells of homes and flakes of what used to be sentimental objects remained. It was devastating to witness. If you've ever visited a mass gravesite, you will understand partially how I was feeling. It was sickening. And to think of all the lives needlessly lost. But I didn't get time to think. Natalia walked towards me, flying down the hallway. How the fuck did you get in here? She screamed, her eyes so wide and angry. I started to feel hotter already. Derek grabbed my arm and pulled me next to him, making sure that he was keeping a tight hold of my arm. Where do you live? Derek asked her. I started to back away as the sweat dropped from my brow. I desperately wanted to shout the number, but I couldn't. It was so hot. I wasn't functioning properly, and everything became so overwhelming. I couldn't even remember what Georgia had said and what flat Natalia had claimed to come from. I'm not that stupid. I saw what happened to them. She gestured over her shoulder to what must have been the flat number 66, where a man laid on the floor, breathing, but looking so broken, just existing in that room. Prudence had been creative with the truth yet again. She didn't kill them. You can't kill them. What Georgia had said? It racked my brain as I felt the skin on my face start to sing. I imagined her melting away. It was happening to me. I was next. And then as my hair started to singe at the ends, it came to me. 71. I screamed as loud as I could. I could barely see as Derek grabbed her and ran towards me with her. She was clawing at his eyes and face, screaming at him to let go, but he didn't burn. He just kept a hold of her, and when he approached flat 71, he beckoned me over. You do it. Then get off this floor. He was blunt but reasonable, so I complied. I pushed hard. There was nothing but anger in her eyes. She pushed my face hard with her hand as I got it across the boundary into flat 71. I could feel my skin sizzling and blistering. My entire face was in agony, but I didn't stop pushing. Watching Natalia try to find her way out of a door that didn't exist was both satisfying and humorous. The others had started to approach at the sound of the commotion. I lingered, hoping to watch her suffer, but Derek shot me one look and I knew it was time to go. I ran out the corridor and back into the stairwell. I stopped for longer than I probably should have, but I knew I might not get to see that 9 again, and it'd be worth it. I waited for Derek on floor 9 stairwell. I couldn't help but imagine the cultist burning to death the first time around. I could hear angry screams faintly from inside the corridor. They made me worry about Derek, but I knew that really, I didn't need to. It took a while, but eventually, he left the corridor and joined me in the stairwell. He didn't say anything. He just looked at me. And the third degree burns across my face. He didn't need to speak. I knew he'd fix the problem. We walked silently back down the stairs towards my flat. And I looked up back at floor 9. Knowing that the building would seal it off for good. It took a few floors to reach floor 7, and I invited Derek in for a cup of tea. He rejected it, saying he wanted to go visit some old friends. Despite my injuries, I couldn't help but smile. Something I'd done was going to help these residents. I stood at my door and watched Derek walk away, pleased that there was some true good in this building. And after a few steps down the hallway, Derek started to fade, almost like a CGI ghost in a movie. Every step he took, he became more transparent. I felt my stomach turn again, like it had been outside the lift. I ran out to follow him. I even called out to him. But by the time I had reached where he was standing, he was already gone. I walked the entire corridor to the window at the back. I looked out the window into a small concrete heavy garden, hoping to see him sat there on a memorial bench. I didn't see him. Instead, I saw Prudence hacking at my tiny planted patch of her shears.